And hello, men. Maybe a few of you ladies listening along since we're in this marriage series. If you're a regular follower to this podcast, you know that I missed last week getting something uploaded. So we're going to continue this week. My apologies for missing out last week. We were doing a small men's retreat, and because of that, forgot to record what we discussed during our retreat. So we're going to just continue with the marriage series as planned. This week we're looking at what happens when difficult circumstances come into a couple's life. We marry making that covenant promise in some fashion or another, the one that says that we will be faithful and loyal and committed to each other. We will remain with each other through good times and bad times, through what we usually say is sickness and health, and through abundance and through poverty and all those things. But sometimes when we make that promise, as a matter of fact, I would say most times when we make that promise, we honestly don't know what we're promising because we've not been through those kinds of experiences. Most of us marry young. If you're in a second marriage now, or maybe even a third marriage and you're listening, by this time perhaps you understand more completely what difficult times are. As a matter of fact, maybe one of the reasons that you're in a second marriage is because you did experience some difficulties in a first one. Well, what we're going to look at this week are follow-up to the differences between men and women and how men and women interpret and process the difficulties that come into their lives. And here's the one thing that we don't want to do. We don't want to let the difficult circumstances that come into our lives tear us apart. Instead, we want to use these difficult circumstances to our advantage. Not that we would willingly go through them, but because we are going through them, we want to use them to as a tool that we can use to bring each other even closer together and appreciate the unique strengths that God has given to each of us. So that in the process of going together through a difficult time, you'll come to value and appreciate the things that God has gifted your mate with. You'll come to value and appreciate the unique way in which God has created women differently than men and men differently than women. Because when we devalue the differences, we're not able to take advantage of them. But when we learn to appreciate those differences, we can not only celebrate them, but in addition to celebrating them, we can start to rely on those unique, distinctive differences. Hope this is a blessing to you, and look forward to getting together with you again next week. So, back to the marriage topic. So far we have looked at several key components of building a better marriage, building a solid marriage. The first was that I need to invest and work in myself. I need to work on myself. Why? What are some of the reasons that we have for why I need to continually work on myself? Yes, as always, I'm amazed at the powerful influence that I have over y'all.
You can't expect anybody else to do anything unless you do it.
Okay. It's good when I hear principles reverbalized in personalized ways, so I like that. Remember what we said a couple of weeks ago. Two people come into a marriage, they're both looking for what the other person is going to bring to them to complete them. So if I come into a marriage looking for how I'm going to be made whole, and she comes into the marriage looking for what she's going to get out of the marriage, who's looking out for the marriage? She's looking to mine something from you, you're looking to mine something from her. Who's made the personal commitment to say, I'm going to become the person that this other person needs? So unless and until I am willing to begin to invest in myself to become the person my wife needs, she's not going to be satisfied. I'm not going to be fulfilling my purpose. And of course, I did recommend, it's really good if you and your wife discuss this material together, maybe even listen to these recordings together, because apart from a few times where we lightly and humorously bash on wives because they're women and we don't always think like women, but apart from it, it's usually pretty good, and I think your wives would really benefit from this. How many of you felt, boy, it would be great if we were both on the same page and we were working on this together and it seems like I'm doing all the work? It's really helpful when both parties to this covenant relationship are working and committed to the process. All right, then we looked at working on the relationship as opposed to, and we said working on the relationship instead of working in the relationship. That was the phrase that I used that I hoped would be memorable. Because there's going to be times in your life when you're going to be so stressed from working in the relationship that you forget why you got married to begin with. What's the difference between working on versus working in? Remember, the idea is a couple of key phrases that stick with you so that when you see this and start to experience this in your own relationship, you say, oh, that's where we are. I know what I need to do next.
Working in is maintenance and working on is growth.
Okay.
Now
you see what Tom did. Tom has redefined it. They're not my words. Tom has redefined it, but he has key words that he's used to identify situations. My definition to you was this, that working in the marriage is doing all of the stuff that married people have to do. Pay the bills, raise the kids because you probably have kids, take care of the home, do all the stuff that is the responsibilities that's part of Marriage Inc. And we distinguish that from working on the relationship because working on the relationship is coming back to the root issue, which is we got together for a reason. And if we're going to stay connected, we have to look for reasons to stay connected. Because as she grows and I grow, we become different people and we can drift apart if we don't continue to work on remaining connected. And that's why so many couples, they start out and they start out great, but they don't have the skills to remain married. And so 20 years later, after the kids are starting to leave the house and the bills are pretty much caught up and the house is where it needs to be and everything, and it's like they should be at the optimal time to start to return to enjoying a rich relationship that they've cultivated over 20 years, but where are they? They don't even know each other anymore. And I'm telling you, it's, you know, when you tell somebody who's 18 that in 30 years this is where they're going to be, what does that sound like? Well, it might, but here's what it sounds like. Don't talk to me about that. That's so far into the distance. I can't even imagine living another 30 years. I've only lived 18 so far. How many of you now are over the age of 50? When you were 20, if I would have said, when you're 50, if you can remember back that far, if you can remember back to when you were 20, if I would have said, when you're 50, you're going to look back on this and you're going to wish you had done some things, what would you have thought at age 20? There's plenty of time for that. 50 is so far away, I'll deal with that later. I can't even imagine what... Now when you're 50... How quickly did those 30 years go by? If you're going through a difficult time, maybe not so quickly. But in all honesty, isn't it amazing how fast 30 years of life can pass? What's different? It's the same 60 seconds, the same 365 days, whether you're 20 or whether you're 50. What's the difference? Huh? Okay.
Younger, and you have milestones like
your knowledge.
Like, grade school and go to the senior high, right? Or I'm going to get my driver's license, or I'm going to turn 21, and you got these points in your life, and all of a sudden you're married, and you're working, and you're the same. So you're not really looking forward, anticipating things, and all of a sudden the years start clicking off. For me, at least.
Oh, I think that's very true. If you begin to practice things when you're young, they'll serve you well for the rest of your life. If you wait until you get to the until moments, it's probably going to be almost too late. We're dealers in hope here in the church, so we don't say it is too late, but we start to say, boy, it's getting close to almost too late. There's a lot of catching up to do. All right, so we're going to talk about one of these things that every couple, when they're young, if they get married in a church in one form or another, they go through this vow that they take, this covenant vow where they say, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, in sickness and in health, and creative couples find ways to do that in different, more exciting ways. Remember what I said about perspective. When you're 18 and you are 20 or 22, for most people in the United States, what is worse, poorer, and sickness look like? It's an abstract. You really don't know what it's like. So you've made a covenant promise. Let's return to that idea of a covenant. What's a covenant? Not a contract. What's a covenant? What distinguishes a contract from a covenant?
No payback.
Huh?
No payback. So terms and conditions are important. Display payback.
Okay. We're going to unpack this one more time. In a contract, each party agrees to do certain things under the condition that the other party does certain other things. I'm going to sell you my car. In exchange for that, you're going to give me $10,000. If you give me $9,000, do I sell you the car? That's a contract. No, I don't sell you the car. And as we all know, I'm not a really nice guy, so I'm not going to trust you for the other $1,000. It's an all or nothing. So in a contract, either party can break the contract if the other side doesn't meet the terms. What's a covenant?
It's permanent.
Why?
Non-conditional. It's between you and God.
It's between me and God, but it's between me and the other person, and here's why. In a contract, the other person determines whether I will fulfill my part of the bargain. If the house isn't the way it was supposed to be, I don't buy it. If you don't meet your end of the relational terms, I don't stay in the relationship. If you promised me $75,000 a year in pay, and 6 months into this new job experience, I'm only getting what's going to be $65,000 a year, you've broken the terms of the contract, and I can break the contract. Under the terms of a covenant, who am I actually keeping my word to when I say I do? I'm keeping my word to myself. I have made a promise to you and to myself that I will be in this relationship for the remainder of my life through sickness and health, through the bad times and the good times, through the wealth and through the poverty. So a covenant is a promise. This is why when we look at God making covenants with us, who is God honoring? Who is God promising to when He says that? He's promising to Himself. And the Scripture says God can't violate His own word. When God says something, when God says yes, it will be yes. Because God will not break His covenant promise. Well, here's the challenge. When you're 20, when you're 25 and you get married and you have no idea what real poverty looks like, when you have no idea what it looks like to be stuck with a sick mate, when you have no idea what it's like for a relationship that you thought was going to be rich and you didn't really know that person as well as you thought you knew them. Remember what we do in this country? We talked about it in week one. We date instead of court. Today, the majority of couples, I would say, and I know that maybe some of you are uncomfortable with this, but the majority of couples are already physically involved before they get married. Remember what we said about how sex complicates a relationship? Because no guy wants to turn off that faucet, right? So you never really deal with the issues of, is this woman right for me? Well, you find out if the woman was right for you. It's just 10 years into the relationship, and then you're starting to have those questions. But still, there's all those things that we don't know. So how do we deal with a marriage during the sickness, the lack of prosperity, the disappointments? And here's the thing. The other week we talked about marriage being a purpose-filled covenant relationship. That we're called by God to do more than make each other happy. What are some of the purposes that we can be called to in a marriage relationship?
Clean the bathroom.
Good. Clean the bathroom. It's Bob's calling. I'm guessing you're not real happy in your marriage, right?
I'm not real good at it.
Does anybody have a higher purpose than clean the bathroom? Now, do you do that together? Is that your joint purpose or is that your purpose only?
Depends on the bathroom. You want to keep going?
No, really, I don't.
Up to you.
Come on, people, dig a little bit.
Multiply.
Huh?
Multiply.
To multiply. There you go. That's a great purpose. The scripture says it a little differently, Ron, but you're on the right track. It says that one of the reasons that God brings men and women together is to produce godly offspring. So what's the real purpose? It's not just the rabbit syndrome, right? Men like the process of making babies, but God calls us to more. God calls us to the process of raising godly children. Why? Huh? To honor him? To grow the kingdom, and that's what, right? That's one of the fastest ways to grow the kingdom. Because godly children are going to go out into a less than godly world, and in theory, they are going to be examples of what a godly life should look like. So one of the ways that God chooses to influence culture is by calling believing, Christ-following men and women to raise children who do likewise, who will go out and in their own unique way be effective, we'll resort to the Christian phrase, salt and light, and they'll be salt and light in the community. In other words, they'll have something attractive about them, and other people say, hey, you know, it looks like their life works. I think I'd like a piece of that. What are some of the other purposes? All right, any of you run a business together? Okay. In culture, businesses that are run well bless people, don't they? They meet people's needs and they help people. Isn't that good? So one of the callings that some couples have is they're called to run businesses together. Any others? Well, how about ministry? Let's look at John and Teresa as an example. You say they're better together than apart as far as ministry? Probably. So together they do ministry. These are purposes. All right, now let's come back to the challenges, the difficulties. Because remember, this is our topic for the morning. How do we deal with difficulties? Some challenges assault the couple, and some challenges assault the purpose. So let's say that John and Teresa go through a period of life where nothing that they do in ministry seems to work right. What happens? They're not here, so we can talk about them. It's good fun.
Frustration.
You know this from personal experience. There was this kid just drove by with this mask on his face. Did you see that? Okay, I'm not the only one here. I don't know, it looked like that hockey mask from that guy in the weird movie, whatever his name is. But anyway. Has something ever assaulted a relational purpose and it starts to divide you? So here's how this looks. We said that one of the purposes that sometimes a couple is called to is to raise, we're going to resort to this Christian phrase, godly children. I know that sounds drab and boring. Let's just say that we're called to raise up children into responsible adults who are effective kingdom citizens. Does it sound better? I'd rather be a part of that than raise godly children, honestly, because that doesn't sound too exciting. And so, along about the time a kid is 16, something tragic happens, and it takes the kid off course. Maybe sickness or death enters the scene. Maybe flat-out rebellion enters the scene. Maybe the kid decides to go his own way, and after pouring years of their life into this child whom they love, they care about, and they think is going to walk in a certain way, that child just goes off in a completely different way. How do the man and the woman respond to that situation? They do, don't they? Remember the other week when we said that one of the things that is so frustrating, we know information, but we don't know how to use it? Here are the three things. Let's talk about this: experience, knowledge, and skill. Over a period of time, you learn that your wife responds in certain ways to certain circumstances. So let's use an example, right? Your wife goes off to see her family. She doesn't have a great relationship with her family, we'll say. We're making this up. And so when she comes home, every time she comes home from seeing her family, you don't go along because you know better. But she does have to go see her family. And whenever she comes home from seeing her family, she's usually depressed. I'm not talking about anybody here, so if this fits, I'm sorry. It's just, it's such a common scenario, honestly, that it probably will fit. Miserable is how she feels when she comes home? You mean in this hypothetical situation that you read about once in a book? Okay. So when she comes home from an extended visit with family, she's drained, she's moody, she's frustrated, and you, being the good husband, want to build her up, and you step into the mix of things and try to offer some encouraging words. Has this ever happened? And how does it go? Sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't. It depends. And so, you have experience. That is experience. I know that when my wife goes to see her family, she is going to come home and she will be a fill in the blank. And I will attempt to step into that gap and offer something to help her. And yet, whenever I do that, it goes poorly. And so experience says, I'll not step into that gap anymore. I'll just let it take its course. And you've discovered that after 3 or 4 days, she bounces back and she's back to her normal self and things are good again. That's experience. But you can't live your life only by experience. I want to talk about, I'll come back to what Brian said about we're different. One of the things that we as men do, and remember I said this before, we know that women are different. Don't we just say that all the time? Women are different. And yet, how do we talk to them?
Like they're men.
We talk to them out of our language, using our brilliant logic, because we reason things out. Women feel things out. We think things through. Women do whatever that weird thing is that they do, and we'll get into that in a minute. And we talk to women as if they're guys, and we're shocked when they don't respond like they're guys. All right, so the next thing is, that's knowledge. We know that men and women are different. So what are some of the ways that we've talked about already about how men and women are different? And I gave you some very specific ways that men and women are different. And this is knowledge. We need that. That's part of why we come to something like this. Yes, Scott.
Men recall things in their life based on the results that they got. Women recall things in their life based on how they made them feel.
Okay. You're looking at your notes. Okay. 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 Good.
I got a memory. It's amazing.
Okay, here is what we said about the difference between men and women. Men remember things based on the other things that were going on in their life at that time. So if you want to recall something and it kind of slips your mind, you'll try to remember about what time you were doing that, what season of the year, What time of the day? Who were the other people in the room at that time? And you'll try to put the pieces together based on other isolated facts. This happens again and again. Women remember things based on the way they felt at the time. So if a woman felt happy at that time, then every other happy thing will be linked to that. If a woman felt bad at that time, then every other bad thing in life will somehow be connected to that. That's one of the differences. What's another one of the differences? Remember how we said men and women problem solve? Vastly different. Put a group of men together, put a group of women together. What differentiates the way women problem solve from the way men problem solve? Okay, that's the expected result. Incidentally, I know you don't think this matters. This matters. You just store all this away. Because son, one day you're going to say, oh, that's why he said that. You just write that down somewhere.
The women will committee and talk it through with their group. Whereas the men will usually, someone steps into the lead. You know, we fly to the east. Someone plows through and tries to stop.
That's it. So when women are faced with a challenge, when women see a circumstance, they surround themselves with other people and they go through the difficult situation together. They solve it together as a group. Men strategize, form a hierarchy, and then individuate. That means they each go out and they do a part of the job. They each go out and solve part of the problem by themselves. Now think about this in your own personal experience. When you are going through a bad situation, a difficult situation, do you enjoy being surrounded by 30 of your closest friends so you can all share this problem together? Or would you rather get alone by yourself and think the problem through? Which is it? Most men prefer to get alone and think through the problem. It's how they cope with something. What do most women want to do? They want to talk it out together. They want to convene. They want to share. They want to go through the experience together. Now think about this going through a problem. What usually happens when a man and a woman who are married and are then man and wife, what happens when they go through a problem together? The man wants to isolate and think through the problem. The woman wants to committee. Well, there's only one person to committee with in your home. That's you. The guy who wants to isolate and solve the problem by himself. Let me be real honest and real practical about that. Does that ever happen? She wants to talk about it. You want to go off for a walk somewhere or be left alone or go for an 80-mile drive in your car and think it through. Maybe one way and never come back, but that's a different discussion.
This is not what we... Actually, important, but as husbands, allow your wives and good friends good time to go out and develop friends, because that's when they'll be on the phone and they have a good friend to talk things out. And some guys I know kind of don't want the wives to go out because they always want to control them and be with them wherever they go and don't allow them to have their women friends. That's really important to have as close friends.
Let's jump down to the bottom of the first page and we're going to read this together because this is exactly what Tom said. Here are a couple of lessons we can take away from the maze. The maze is incidentally what Brian just talked about. Remember the maze illustration that we talked about the other week? Social scientists threw groups of men and groups of women into a maze situation together, and this is how they discovered this thing that Brian just described and we talked about. Women will tend to stay together and walk through the maze together, take all the dead ends and the wrong turns together because they want to work together to solve the problem. There's no hierarchy. They're all equal and they all go through the thing together. Men will just, you throw groups of men, and they've watched this again and again, you threw groups of men into a maze, they'll pretty soon have formed a hierarchy, appointed a leader. There's people that are under the leader. They send out scouts, each going out his own individual way to solve part of the problem by themselves, and they get through the maze that way.
Who got through first?
See, now why you got to go there? Because that would imply somebody was better and somebody wasn't. Okay, now we're not going there. Come on.
I will lament.
There you go. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to read this. Your wife will really value some good female friends who can be there for her and what you may not be able to be. So your wife is looking for you to be something. Remember what I said, we tend to treat the opposite sex as if they were the same. You know, your wife does that too. It's not just you. So your wife communicates with you and hopes that you're going to be another girl. And you're not. And you communicate with your wife and hope she's going to be another guy. And she's not. You both need to understand how you are. So you got to take this information home and tell her, listen here, dear, you're messed up, but let me tell you the way you're messed up. Report back next week. Tell me how that went for you. Okay, so don't resent. This is an inadequacy issue. See, a lot of guys will, either Tom said they'll feel insecure and they don't want their wives to leave because they want to control. Another thing is, men will feel inadequate. Aren't I enough to help solve this problem? Well, the reality is, no, you're not. Women are wired different than men. Your wife will enjoy and benefit from getting away with some other females and talking through the situation. Give her permission to do that. As a matter of fact, encourage her to do that. It's not what you excel at. And I'm not, these are broad brush statements. So maybe some of you are all hold hands kumbaya and you'll all talk through and live life together. I don't know. Maybe that's the way you are. I'm not. Just get away from me. Let me think this through. And I have literally for years encouraged my wife, go find some friends that you can talk to about that because I'm not your man there for that. However, when we know this, we also know that we have to enhance our skills. And that's the third thing, move up. So experience teaches me things about my wife. Knowledge is what we just talked about. These are the principles of absorbing different pieces of information about how men and women are different. Skills are learning how to put them to work. So, okay, I know men are different from women, but what do I do about that? That's what skills are. All right, so we're going to go through some basic steps here. The first is, give your wife permission in a difficult time to go off and fellowship with other women. Do you know women that you would... And some women are actually a little reluctant to do this. Encourage her to do that. Maybe even help her to find a couple of friends that she can do that with. If we had time, we'd do another overlay because in addition to this, there's personality profiles that make some people more extroverted, some people more introverted. You may have a wife who's not particularly outgoing. You may have a wife who's very outgoing. And so part of this knowledge set is not only understanding the differences between men and women, but it's also understanding the differences between different personality profiles. Has anybody ever gone through a personality profile test so that you know who you are? What your basic, okay, Bob has, you have. Some of you have, some of you haven't. I'd really encourage you to do that. It can be very helpful to your relationship. I suspect that there are probably some free ones online. If not, we could certainly get one for you if you're interested. It's really enlightening when you understand who you are on the inside and that some of your behavior is not, it's just the way you are. All right, let's keep reading through these. Here's what your wife is looking for, which is the second one. Be the best friend you're able to be. Work to connect in all areas of life. Try to think more holistically. One of the other things that we talked about when it comes to women is that women tend to think about a lot of problems at once. When a guy thinks about a problem, he thinks about that problem. That's it. I'm going to solve this problem. When a woman thinks about a problem, she thinks about how that problem is connected to every other problem in life. What did we say was the outcome of that? Women tend to melt down more easily in stressful situations. It's not because they're bad. It's not because they're weak. It's the way women process information. For you, the pipe bursting in the bathroom is, okay, I got to fix the pipe. I'll fix the pipe. When I'm done fixing the pipe, then I'll consider, okay, there's some water damage, and then I'll deal with the water damage. Your wife, on the other hand, is thinking, the pipe is burst, the bathroom is ruined, my guests are going to think my house is ugly, it's going to make me look bad as a host, my social reputation is ruined, what have I overlooked? I mean, you still... Huh? Yeah, right, right. Now I can't care for myself, and so my husband's not going to love me anymore, and he's going to leave and go off to be with another woman. All because the pipe in the bathroom burst. All right, now that's an extreme, but that is really the difference between the way men and women think. So very often, if you get into a challenging financial situation, you're thinking about the money. I got to figure out how to pay these bills. I got to figure out how to keep an income stream coming in. I got to process this. Your wife is already on to, we're not going to be able to pay for the kids to go to college. You're worrying about whether you can pay the car payment next month. Your wife is already thinking about all these other things. Is there any truth to this? Have you ever experienced this? What do you do with that? So now we know this. If you know the tendency of a male and you know the tendency of a female, can you not support each other and say, oh, I see where this is going? And she can say, you know, you need to step back a notch and see the bigger picture and what's happening here. When you know the qualities and the temperaments and the styles of each other, you can start to walk through the crisis together instead of isolating. Have you ever gotten mad at the way your wife responds to a crisis?
No.
No?
It's on tape. No.
No? Never. Does this help make the responses more sensible? Think about it for a minute. Of course it does. We're not saying easy, but men love a challenge, don't they? Okay, what would you like your wife to know? This is why I'm encouraging you to listen to this stuff together with your wife later, or review these notes with your wife. What would you like your wife to know about the way you process information? Has your wife ever chased after you to have a conversation? What do you want her to know? Nothing? Huh?
How to relax and look at, yeah. Instead of jumping at it, how to relax and look at the whole thing before you react.
What do you want her to know, not only about the problem, but about you as a man?
I need time to shut down.
Has your wife ever accused you of being insensitive and uncaring about the situation? Is that true? Is it that you really didn't care? Of course it's not. Have you ever been shot, actually blindsided by, well, you just don't care about this. Really? I've been investing 18 hours a day in trying to fix this problem. I'm exhausted. I'm emotionally draining. You're saying I don't care about this? Really? See, both. Go ahead.
You said it's been like a challenge, but in some cases, you have all your challenges at work and all these things that, you know, we have to do, and we expect our marriage to come home and just be a peaceful time and something you gotta continue to work on. You don't want that challenge maybe at that point because you're exhausted from all your other challenges of the day. You just, why can't the marriage be easy? Why can't this thing be smooth? You're not really want to take on that challenge.
And it's true. Pat, did you have some... Are you stretching, or you wanted to say?
How about in situations where, for me, when something happens, I'd rather just respond to it and feel that things need to be responded to faster rather than later, because some things just need a response to it. So I think if you want to sit and kind of pause and freeze, like idle time is going by, that... So I've tried to speak to my wife about that, and Because I rather feel like, for example, my son's head got busted. He jumped off the bed and busted his head on the window sill. And my wife's response is kind of like, Dad. And I'm kind of like, all right, how do we fix this? What we got to do is get the car, let's get the keys, let's do what we got to do. And she's right there. And I try to explain that because, to me, if things happen in the future, maybe there's an emergency and something's going down, we have to respond and then figure it out later. Right there. Process through that later. And her response is sometimes, this is the way that I am. Can't you just accept that? And for me, I want to be able to support you and be accepting of kind of who you are, but it goes against really something I struggle to believe in. Am I supposed to be supportive towards that?
Well, see, you just affirmed that what you're looking for in that situation, you want your wife to respond like a guy. We all want that at times.
Yeah, it is.
Because what you just said was you outlined a clear series of steps. I want to do this, 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 and this. Now, were you thinking about the fact that, oh, geez, the car might need an oil change. I wonder if we can drive to the hospital before we get an oil change on the car. If you here, listen to me. There's already been, you know, 100 years ago we didn't know this stuff. Today we know this stuff. They're able to measure brain activity in specific areas of the brain when people are exposed to certain problems. Okay, when men are exposed to a problem, there's typically a very small percentage of the brain that is activated on one side or the other. When women are exposed to a problem, areas of both sides of the brain are going nuts. They're integrating information from a lot more sources when they do this. Now, a creative woman would say, well, that's because men only have half a brain, so it's they're using all they've got. Here is the beauty of this, okay? So listen. This is the beauty of this. We can either make a choice to be frustrated by the differences between men and women, or we can feel that we are blessed by the fact that God has given men and women into the same into a relationship because they each bring something to the relationship that the other doesn't. So there are times when your wife should just, you know, in this case, in an ideal situation, your wife is going to simply defer to you in that case. You're going to handle that. You'll do it well. Just tell me what to do. There are other situations where your wife is going to be a better integrator of information from and emotion from a variety of sources. And maybe you're actually going to, as uncomfortable as this is, maybe you're going to follow her lead in certain circumstances because you're going to trust her judgment. Have you ever heard guys say that their wives have said to them, well, I don't know why, but I just have a feeling that you shouldn't do this. Have you ever heard that? It's the story of countless men that they have gone ahead and done something that they were confident was going to work, and their wives would say, I don't know why, but I just have a feeling you shouldn't do this. And much to the guy, and the woman could never articulate why, which is the frustrating part of it. Well, why? Give me some facts. Give me some reasons why I shouldn't do this. Well, I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. Well, that gives me a lot to go on. Tell me why I shouldn't do this. And so the guy goes off and does it. And it doesn't work well. Now, the loving and supportive wife will just let that go. The wives that you and I are married to will say, see, I told you so. Oh, I suppose your wife has never said, see, I told you so, right? What's happening there? Ron, I will be with you in a moment. What's happening is that we are each unconsciously observing the differences between the two sexes, but we're not able to articulate what they are. I'm helping us to try to understand specifically what's going on. Ron.
I find that in times of God's stressful things, you can sit down and learn us about each other. A good example would be watching Winner from Mars, Winner from Venus together, because it goes through all of this stuff very well in an enlightened manner. But when the crisis comes, we tend to forget all that and revert back to normal.
Did you hear what Ron said?
Yeah.
in a crisis, here's the way we say it here. You've probably heard me say this repetitively. In a crisis, we resort to our default mode. Whatever that default mode is, that's what we go to. So if you want to do this, to speak to what Ron says, learn these things in a calm time, start to practice them in a calm time so that they, in a crisis, become your habitual mode of operating. You can recreate your go-to mode. But if you wait until a crisis and you haven't learned how to deal this way in the normal times, your go-to mode is going to be your typical testosterone-filled guy mode. Somebody else had their hand up.
And like your example, what happens as we'd like to be the leaders in things. So in that moment, actions call, just let's go. But then with your three things, applying the knowledge that she's seeing it differently. Leader's gotta be the one, like our salesman call. Why did this guy say no? Why did she say this? And when Ron's talking, being able to revisit it, say, listen, I was in a panic about it. You know? She's in a panic call. She's in a panic, we're in a panic. We see there's the door. She's like, get the keys, all that stuff. It's our responsibility, or hopefully, like, we're here talking about this so that our skill level improves, so that I can come back and say, you know, at that moment I was a little short. You know, I understand you feel differently in these moments. That's working on the relationship, not in the relationship.
That absolutely is.
Being able to making that a habit to revisit this. And it's awkward because we're, you know, I'm going to take that walk and this set, you settle this down all yourself. But then she's over there with her girlfriend maybe settling things. And I'm over here calling my buddy saying, let's go shoot pool. And where are we? You know, when the house is empty. We're in two different worlds.
Well, to try to sort of combine what you said with what Tom said, it is probably our responsibility as, and I say this, I try to say this graciously, God's appointed leaders in the home. And I want to say that in a way that it doesn't offend women. Because most men really don't want this responsibility. Because it's not God's appointed tyrant in the home. To be the kind of a leader God wants in the home is really tough work, and a lot of men would rather not do it. That's really the way it is. So to speak to what Tom said, it is you as the guy carving out the time in the family schedule sometime to actually have those conversations like you said. Here's how we handled this. I didn't handle my part maybe as well as I should have. Be vulnerable and say, and actually the way you handled your part maybe hurt me a little bit or made it difficult for me to do what I needed to do. It's going to be your responsibility. And usually it's the woman, again, because the woman is more relationally oriented, it is usually the woman chasing after the guy to have the conversation. I'm telling you, turn that around, be a responsible, strategic family leader, and you initiate the conversation. If it's not the right time with her, I haven't forgotten you, if it's not the right time for her, then revisit it. But turn this around and you take responsibility for working on the relationship. Yes.
Along those lines, I've found, and this speaks a little bit to your situation too, I've found that the more I'm willing in times where there's not crisis mode, the more I'm willing to come to my wife and say, look, this is what I'm thinking. Even though I think I have the whole perspective, I'll say, this is what I'm thinking about a situation. Give me some of your perspective. The more I do that to her, we have those little 5-minute conversations here, and then she adds to what I see, then when a crisis mode hit, I can look at her and say, look, trust me, and she will. Because when it's not crisis mode, I trust her for her perspective. And she'll see that I want the best, and she'll just follow me. And then after crisis mode, we can get back together and say, well, what did you see in that situation that I could have done differently? But in the moment, she'll be willing to follow me.
Yeah. All right. One of the cool things that we get to do here, what I would encourage every couple to do is get together and have built some connection with some couples that have been married for a lot longer. You know, like I said when I started this, when a guy is 20 or 22 or 25 and he gets married for the first time and he makes that covenant promise about, you know, the sicker, the poorer, the right, all that exciting stuff, he doesn't really know what that looks like and feels like yet, probably. Get around some couples who have been there and experienced that and start to listen to their stories and listen to how they've moved through that. When I say get together with couples, first off, that assumes they've stayed together, right? So that's an encouraging sign. I didn't say get together with the individuals who used to be married before they went through the difficult time. Get together with couples. Get together with couples you respect. And we assume that couples that are in church and married are all happily married. That's not always true. You're going to learn... What's that? What? You know what? The coolest people... This is something you don't appreciate when you're 20, or at least I didn't appreciate when I was 20 or 25. You know, it is amazing if you sit and listen to couples who are in their 70s, if they're still, you know, if they're still married, they're still alive. Couples in their 60s, man, they've got some good stories. Not everybody is that open and candid. How many of you have appreciated the couple of times that Randall's been up here and talked? Right, there's some really interesting perspective that the man has. What's cool is he's honest and open about some of it, about his own inadequacies, about his own uncertainties, how he handled things poorly. And one of the reasons that I think it's helpful to get to talk to couples that are at that age is, you know, most men, when they're still in their 30s and even into their 40s, they're still trying to mask some of their insecurities. They're still trying to cover and gloss over the areas where they didn't handle it well. By the time you get into your 50s, you realize, all right, you know what, I screwed it all up. May as well just let people know it. You're not, what?
You don't care anymore.
Yeah, you don't care anymore. So I really think it's helpful to get around some older people. And okay, I'll say the obvious, right? Sometimes older people are a little bit slow and you don't get some of their mannerisms. And of course, I realize I'm starting to be one of those older people. So I've got to watch what I say here. Get over the little bit of discomfort because there's a lot of good stuff to mine in there.
Okay, when you're midstream in your marriage, say 10 years, you're still trying to change them into who you want them to be, and they're trying to change you into who you want to be. Eventually, you start to realize she has as much right to be what she wants to be as you want to be what you want to be. And you got to work together to understand that she has the right to her opinion as much as you have a right here. You know, you don't try to prove that she's wrong, because she's right. The way she thinks she's right, and the way you think you're right. And actually are both right in a way. You know, or wrong, yeah, one or the other. But if you're going to find out that if you both think the same, you're never going to last. Because one thing you always got to remember, opposite attract, the same as magic. You have to have two sides to debate. I mean, to get along. You know, if you both got, you wouldn't need each other. You know, if you're both the same. You know, there's always got to be a different side. Like you said, when your son got hurt, she went, you know, one way, and you went a different way to handle it. It keeps each other intact. You know, you keep her in check, she keeps you in check. You know, she puts the feeling into it, and you put the necessity into it. And together, it works a lot better than if there was two females there trying to get it done, or two males there to get it done. Something always gets left out. So you got to work on it as a team. You are a team. You know, I think when you get to an older, like,
Go on, say it. When you get to be my age, just go right out and say that.
We're more of a match. You know, you did together a lot better than you did years ago when you were trying to prove you were the best one of the group. You know, the more...
Come on, buddy. Hey, my coffee, huh? You're failing me here.
All that doesn't really matter. You just get along. You know, eventually you get it. So I think that's the big thing. You just have to keep working. That's when working with Travis. Stop trying to prove that you're right and she's wrong. Or she's trying to stop proving you're wrong. She's right, you're wrong. The sooner you stop that, the better off you're going to be.
And that honestly takes a while. If you were to track a typical relational cycle, you'll find that most couples don't come to that awareness until 15, 20 years into a relationship, where finally they abandon all hope of changing the other person to be whom they want them to be, and they finally start to accept that.
Most divorced couples did it because they thought she was always wrong. You know, she's wrong, he's wrong. And instead of working together, find out that you're both right, you know, one way or another, and stay together. You know, most people start arguing enough, and then they leave each other instead of working together.
And what's amazing is what Art has just said, I have heard said from both men and women in marriages, not just men. I can remember very clearly a conversation that I had with a woman who was married probably 28, 30 years by that time. And she said it was probably 25 years into our marriage before I finally understood that he was who he was. And I was never going to change him. She said, up until that point, I was miserable because I wasn't married to the man I wanted to be married to. And she said, and I'm pretty sure he was miserable too, because I think I made him that way every day. And he says, and then there was just this gradual awareness, and she was a believer. And so I want to emphasize this, just because you're a Christ follower doesn't mean you're going to do marriage well. I want you to hear that. 25 years of following Christ and making the man next to her miserable. And I'm not saying that relationship is unique. Until finally, she said, and you know what? Since we've just learned to appreciate each other for who we really are, we actually like each other now. And we enjoy each other. And we have fun. You're laughing now, buddy. We're going to check back with you in 5-10 years. Did I see a hand up over here somewhere? Yes.
Just going over and trying to change that person, what really helps me, if you look at yourself, there's lots of things I'd like to change. I've been working at it forever, and it's not really happening that much. If I can't change myself, what makes me think I'm going to be able to change myself?
Oh, yeah.
Come get real. I can't deal with stuff myself.
Like the wisdom with age theory. For men, well, you know, for me, it was ran through it at 20. You know, let's jump to it. Let's get to it. At 50, something. There's time. There's going to be the time, and part of that's I got 50. You know, today is only one of 50 times 365. Whereas at 20, it was a higher percentage of a smaller whole. You know, and that time that plays out against me being so right in my manly way of jumping in and getting it done. Like if wisdom shows me that things that I don't have to get done in a minute, well, maybe she's right about there's time to talk about this and think about it. You know, like, you know, both right, you know, I'm right to jump in and get it done, but with the grain of salt or with the degree of I can adjust or should be adjusting.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is that when you're 20 and you want to fix everything all at once and you want to get everything solved at once, you don't have the perspective that comes from years of, oh, we're going to have years to deal with this. There's an urgency about fixing everything because your life is short, you haven't experienced that much, and so every minute seems like a lot. And there's a new challenge. But you hear what Tom said? that when you stop setting new goals and you settle into that just going through the motions and paying the bills and going to work, and that's where life slips by. And about the only thing new that does come into your life is something bad then. All right. There's more stuff here than I covered, which usually is the case. But we're also way over time. So I'm going to have to wrap it up. Maybe we'll return to this next week.